Hey guys, welcome back to the All In Podcast. This is episode 39, and we are here on a Wednesday night. Kind of weird Wednesday night. No NBA tonight, no NFL tonight. We're kind of getting spoiled with all these sports at once, but what are you going to do tonight, man?
Honestly, I have no idea. I know, maybe, I don't know, I'll entertain Raya or something. I don't know. Oh,
yeah. Maybe hang out with your dog. Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Yeah, we're getting spoiled with all the sports, but we are going to do this anyway. We're going to podcast. We've got a very exciting segment coming up after this that you guys are going to talk about. But first, we are going to talk about some NBA. So let's start with Game 7. We saw last night the Nuggets beat the Clippers in Game 7 in the Western Conference playoffs. They advanced to the Western Conference Finals to face the Lakers. This was a shock. Had Twitter going crazy. Every morning show was going crazy. The Nuggets come back from 3-1 for the second time in a row this playoffs. Give us your thoughts about the game last night.
I honestly don't know where to start with this one.
Yeah.
Because it's funny. You know, it's 3-1. Nuggets win, pull it back to 3-2. And we're like, okay, well, they're going to close it out in 6.
Yep.
Then the Nuggets silently force this game 7. And we came on this podcast and we're both just like, all right, well, you know, it's certainly bad for the Clippers. But we both took the Clippers. We're like, you know, they're going to figure it out. You know, right. Kawhi's going to take over. You know what I mean? The talent will prevail. And then that first 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, the Nuggets just ran away with it. And, you know, the Clippers had just, if we're just talking from the game standpoint, throughout this game, they were pretty bad offensively from a shot making standpoint. Like they got a lot of open looks throughout this game and just missed a ton of them.
Yep.
And you know, Denver, you know, even started off slow offensively in this game as well. And again, you know, the Clippers built themselves a double digit lead somehow, some way. And even when they did it, deep down, I was just like, this means nothing. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, because we've seen them for 2 straight games blow double-digit leads. So it was like, it was crazy how, like, deep down, I was just sitting there like, it ain't over yet. You know what I mean? Like, they still have a lot of work to do. And of course, the Nuggets clawed their way back into it. We're down 2 at the half. You know, went and battled in that third quarter. Went back to, was fighting through that. And then that opening 6 minutes of the fourth, really half the first half of that quarter, they just put the paws on the Clippers, man. Yep. And, you know, it was really with the same set over and over again. It was this high pick and roll that they were running with Jokic and Murray. And as if you're watching on YouTube, you can see it here on the screen. And all they were doing is Jokic would get into this, he would set that screen. He'd get into that foul line area after he rolls, and Jamal Murray would hit him quick so that he could make the next decision and the next pass really is what it ended up being. Because obviously the defense is going to collapse on the Nuggets' best player. So he was forcing, you know, whoever that backline defender, it was often Paul George, but really, you know, now it's a 3-on-4, right? You got Paul Millsap making this cut on the baseline,
right,
which forces that wing defender to drop. And he's like, okay, well, you got to make a decision now. You're either going to have to drop and take this cutter, or it's an easy dunk. Or if you drop, I'm just going to kick it to the shooter over here on the wing or deep wing area for an easy wide open look. And they did it repeatedly. The Clippers had no answer for it. And it was mostly because, you know, they were so afraid of Jamal Murray in the ball screen. They were blitzing him. And you know, I don't really know what the adjustment would have been because of how well he played throughout this series. But, like, do you really want to be in this situation where Joker can just catch and, you know, force your defense to collapse like this and then just make plays? Because this is where he's at his absolute best, if you ask me, is when he can just get everybody else easy shots. And he puts the defense in these what we call decision points where it's like, okay, well, pick your poison. And then I'm just going to hit the guy that you leave open, and we're going to get an open look. And they just repeatedly did it over and over again. And the Clippers couldn't do anything about it. And, you know, when you look at that specifically, it makes a lot of sense why the Clippers won this game. But if you go back and you look at these two teams on paper, there's no reason the Clippers should have lost this game, right. Period. And to me, you know, we see again Paul George on the biggest and brightest lights shrink on the biggest stage. And you know, again, I'm a Paul George apologist, I guess, for a lot of times. And in this case, I have nothing for him today. Because he was god awful once again in a game seven do or die situation with, you know, 10 points, awful shooting night. He hit the side of the backboard on a corner three. I mean, he looked terrified looked. And then, you know, I think we need to have a serious discussion about Kawhi Leonard.
Oh,
and here's what we need to have a discussion about.
Oh boy.
Kawhi Leonard is a great player. Let me just put that out there first and foremost. He's a championship caliber player, and still one of the best two-way players in the league. The issue with Kawhi Leonard as your very best player is that he is not a leader. His energy does not feed onto his teammates like other leaders in the NBA. If we're being 100% honest, look at LeBron James. When LeBron James is on the floor, there's a presence. His teammates feel it, you know what I mean? And they even talk about it. It creates anxiety and sometimes because they feel it so much. But at the end of the day, LeBron James has this way of his energy when he's in that mood.
Yeah.
It feeds off on the rest of his teammates. Even when Kawhi Leonard is at his best, I don't see that, right? You look at, you know, a guy like Stephen Curry. When Stephen Curry's hot, and he's not their vocal leader, but he's a leader by example, right? He's one of those guys where when he's hot, there's nothing you can do. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing you can do as a defense, but everybody else is energized, right?
Especially
when it's at home, the fans are in it. You know what I mean? And it's just like, you just feel you're getting pummeled. You know what I mean? When he's hitting you with all those threes, things like that. And there's other guys in the league, obviously, who have that impact, but Kawhi Leonard does not. And when you really sit back and think about it, even on the Raptors last year, he wasn't the leader of that team.
Well, he didn't need to be. Kyle Lowry.
He didn't need to be. And Kyle Lowry was, right? So Kyle Lowry was the team, was who made that team beat. You know, he was the heartbeat of that team. He's what made them go. Kawhi Leonard was there to close games, not to carry them in any facet of the imagination, because they were very, very good without him last year and again this year. So his job was literally, hey, come down, come here and knock down these big time shots down the stretch. Or when we need go to buckets, we can give you the ball to do so.
Yep.
And then you go back to his time at the Spurs. Obviously, he started with Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Monte Ginobili. He didn't have to say a word when you have those three legends as your teammates. And after they left, we saw what happened. He had a good run in the playoffs, although Ginobili was still there.
Yes.
And I believe Tony Parker was still there. Correct me if I'm wrong. On that last run where he got hurt against the Warriors, I think Tony was gone by then. But Ginobili was still there, at least.
Yeah.
So he's still not quite the leader of that team. And as long as Kawhi Leonard has had a tremendous amount of support and depth, he has not been exposed like he was in this series. Last night, we saw Kawhi Leonard on the biggest stage score 14 points on 6 of 22 shooting. Never in my life would I have thought up until this point I would be reading a stat line like that for Kawhi Leonard. Because, you know, for this long time we've seen him in this Michael Jordan, Kobe-like light. And I think it was a facade, if you ask me. I don't think he was ever truly that guy.
Oh, man, you're tearing into him.
I don't think he was ever truly that guy. He just had those moments. Let's really look at it.
Yeah.
What, other than last year in the playoffs, when has he been the guy that goes down the stretch and makes these big shots? He did it last year. Granted, great. He didn't do it at all this year. Even against the Mavs, I don't think we really saw that in the first round series. You know, not to the extent we saw it last year. If we go back to when he was playing with the Spurs.
Yeah, it wasn't like that.
The last time he was in the playoffs, it was not like that. Mm. And I think we bought a little bit too much of the Kool-Aid from last year's playoff run. And we forgot that Kawhi Leonard actually has a history of disappearing in big moments. We go back to game six, Spurs Heat. Before Ray Allen hits that shot, he missed on two different times. He missed free throws down the stretch that would have iced the game and put, you know, Ray Allen's three wouldn't have even mattered had he knocked down a free throw the prior possession, because they would have been up four. And obviously he was young, so maybe we give him a little bit of a pass for that. But last night I think we saw that resurface. That he got tense. He didn't look like he could get to his spots for the first time in a long time. He just looked like he couldn't get to his spots and get comfortable and get the shots that he wanted. And he looked incredibly tense yesterday. And I'm not saying he's not a closer anymore. I don't want that to be the message that comes from this. But I think we overrated him as a closer.
It's going to be worse. The message is going to be worse than that, Kobe. Laying into him. you know what? It's tough. But I definitely think this. I think, you know, if we're having this conversation and we do this, you know, every 2 years we have this guy who is now the best player in the world, and it's not LeBron anymore. It's this new guy. We do this, you know, since 2012 we've been doing this. Kawhi was the next guy on that list, I think, after last year. Kawhi became that guy, you know. Yeah. And, you know, it was Steph, then it was KD, and then it was Kawhi, and then Giannis, I guess, but, you know, he's never had the success in the playoffs, so we've never actually anointed him.
Exactly.
And I think now we look at it and we're like, no, still LeBron.
Still LeBron.
It's still LeBron. Like, and, you know, if he doesn't, you know, if they lose to the Nuggets, like, I don't know if we're going suddenly like, oh, maybe Jokic is that guy. If they make the finals, because I think if you looked at this, like, actually Denver, they could be okay against the Lakers. Like, I don't know who the Lakers are going to throw on Jamal Murray, but I'm sure he's going to get his, like, just the way they play, like, between him and Jokic. And Jokic, when he's at his best, is really good. Like, they kind of match up kind of well with the Lakers, very similar. You know, we talked about the Clippers, and it kind of makes sense that the Clippers lost to the Nuggets just for that same reason. Like, they're a similar team to the Lakers. And we talk about, you know, when we talk about Clippers and Lakers, we were always previewing Clippers versus Lakers because we just all assumed that that was going to be the Western Conference Finals. And maybe, you know, for good reason, it was that big of a collapse. They're up 3-1, up 19 in game five, up 16 in game six. Like, and then in game seven was just the most flat I've ever seen a team just absolutely scared in the fourth quarter to even shoot the ball, let alone attack. But maybe, you know, we look at that, and when we were previewing Lakers-Clippers, we were always saying, what are they going to do with Anthony Davis? Anthony Davis is the biggest mismatch here. He's a bigger mismatch than Kawhi is. You know, what are they going to do with Anthony Davis? Well, like, same kind of thing. What are they going to do with Jokic? Like, Jokic was a problem for them. They could not do anything. Harrell was terrible all playoffs long. Specifically in this series, he was very bad, unplayable at times, really.
Yep.
And Zubac was not a guy who could match Jokic's athletic ability at all. And, like, Jokic was just toying with him, really, like, with his footwork. And, like, he couldn't be on the same court guarding Jokic. And then that puts the Clippers in a really big bind whenever, you know, they're throwing Kawhi on him. Like, they're trying all different things.
Yeah.
Paul George on Jamal Murray, Kawhi on Jokic. And then you just think, okay, well, then we can switch everything. Well, not really. Because, you know, they both are guys who want to get out and hedge or get over those screens. And then just like you broke down, that opens up almost every time because you're so focused on Murray shooting the three and how great he's been in the playoffs and how, you know, we're going to have to start looking at him going forward as a top, you know, 2015 guy. Like, where do we put Jamal Murray on this, you know, totem pole when we rank these under 25 guys or under 23? Like, I think Jamal Murray probably is in that group with Devin Booker and Donovan Mitchell, certainly that level. Maybe he's approaching the Tatum. And then obviously after that, you have like Luka and Jokic. Obviously Giannis is a different level probably.
Yeah.
But like, I think he's inserted himself in that conversation. Like, it's not like this was a first round game either. This was game seven against the team that all year were like in the playoffs is going to be so tough to beat them and score on them. And Jamal Murray scores 40 and puts on a show.
Yeah.
You know, looking back, of course, we always look back at him and say, of course, how did we not think of that? But it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Let me ask this. Are you off of Doc Rivers? Are you You think they should move on, or you think they should keep him around?
I would move on from Doc Rivers because he now has blown a 3-1 lead in three different decades under three different presidents. Wow. Doc Rivers has a history of blowing leads now. Yeah. And it's a bad one, to the point where in 2010 finals, the audio just came out of Phil Jackson in a huddle with the Lakers on the road in Boston, talking about how the Celtics blow leads in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
So, and that was the same year that they went on to win a championship, which they were down 3-2 in that series as well. Mm-hmm. Doc Rivers teams blow leads. I don't know what it is. I hate to do this to a black coach during a social justice movement about equality.
Well, and a leader too, at that. A leader in the movement.
But he has one too many failures.
Yeah.
Of lead blowing in this case. So yes, I'm out on Doc Rivers. And honestly, he has won championship after a trade that got him by far the best team in the league at that time.
Yeah.
And then lost in the Eastern Conference Finals the following year with that team, and then lost in the finals up 3-2. With the same team following after that, and they never really had a chance getting back past that point. So, yeah, I'm out on Doc Rivers.
Yeah, that's tough. You know, he's obviously such a leader, and I would love to see him maybe in like a front office job or even working in the league office. That might be a good role. But like,
yeah,
I think if I'm the Clippers, I'm just looking at it, and you know, obviously now if I'm the Clippers, I'm saying, well, Kawhi, what do you want to do, man? You want to keep him? You want to get rid of him? And Kawhi's going to be like, no, I think we're okay, you know? And
yeah.
And they'll be fine. And probably Doc Rivers, I think, is going to be there next year.
Yeah.
I did see Chris Haynes had said that was going – I mean, people say that all the time, and people are out the next day. Right. But I think they're probably going to keep him around. I would be with you, though, and say I'd maybe move on from him. So let's go to Eastern Conference Finals then. We saw Game 1 yesterday. Overtime, Heat beat the Celtics by 3. Jimmy Butler had the huge bucket. This was a really good game.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent game to watch, which we all expected coming into this series. You know, the Heat, Celtics, and the Raptors were all really evenly matched teams. And so whoever we got in this conference finals was, you know, this was going to be great to watch. This one's going 7. I don't know if that's not apparent. Has to go 7. The Heat have the best closer so far in this postseason, which has been Jimmy Butler, and he did it again last night in overtime. And then Bam with like one of the greatest blocks I think I've ever seen live.
Easily.
You know, on Jason Tatum. You know, so
I don't know how his shoulder didn't like just pop out. Like,
mine would have been done for, I can tell you that right. So yeah, I mean, it was a great game to watch. You know, so I had the Celtics in 7. I said that on Twitter. I'll say it here on the podcast. I still am going to stick with that. I think they even it up in the next game. Because I think Kemba Walker is the biggest mismatch here, but he's going to have to play so much better, man. He has not looked good.
What's going on with him?
I don't know. He was playing so well. And then the Raptors kind of like that box in one, I think, has just kind of thrown him out of rhythm.
Messed him
up.
So
we'll see, man, if he can find, because if he doesn't, I don't think the Celtics can win this series. So
He'll find it. He'll come out with a step back one day and we'll say, oh, there's Kemba.
Yep.
There's fucking Kemba.
He did pull it out last night. Just wasn't for game. Listen, but he did pull it out. Yeah.
He's dirty. So I think I probably am going to go with the Heat in this series. I would just check the Heat before the series started. And I don't think this game really tells us who's a better team at all. I think it just tells us they're pretty evenly matched and this is going to be a 7-game series.
Agreed.
I think this is going to come down to like, you know, is Tatum ready to be that guy? You know, he beat the Raptors, but really his main, you know, because let's be honest, a lot of times it's who's the best player in the series, especially when the teams are so tight like this, like Toronto and Boston and Miami and Boston. They're so tight that it's like, who's the best player in the series? And, you know, if Tatum wants to be the guy, you know, I think Jimmy Butler is fringe top 10 of most lists of NBA players.
Yeah.
Now in the playoffs, he takes it to another level though. And that's kind of like the mystique with him, is like how he elevates in the playoffs, and how he's just like a guy you want on your team in the playoffs. Like, you want him with the ball in his hands for your team in the playoffs. There's a few guys that you would trust more with the ball in their hands for your team than Jimmy Butler. And like, if Jason Tatum wants to be considered that type of a guy, I think he has to outplay Jimmy Butler and he has to win the series. Otherwise, we're going to look at Jimmy, and if Jimmy goes to the finals, like, how are we going to think of him differently? Like, that's the beauty of when we get down to these Eastern Conference finals and then the finals. Like, the narratives around these games are so important for legacy. Yeah. Like, this guy, he made the – like, if he makes the finals, like, that's something that sticks with your resume. Like, and, of course, if you win a championship, like, that sticks with your resume. Like, the type of guy we think of you as. Like, just think of Harden and all the mistakes he said. Think of the type of guy we think of him as. Like, we just don't trust him. Like, think – like, an exercise sometimes you can do is, like, okay, minute 30, open three, he shoots it. They're down by two. Do I think it's going in? Right. And I feel pretty confident with my success rate of, like, if that guy's shooting, like, I feel pretty good if I'm like, he's going to make that. Like, usually that guy makes it, because we know what a lot of these guys do. We remember the legacy. Sometimes we're wrong in the regular season, but, like, this is what we remember, is what you do in these moments. So it's going to be so cool to see Jimmy, like, if he ascends to, you know, like, if he makes the finals. And so let's do this then. If the Heat win, I think the Heat winning is totally justified. I think they're actually just a slight favorite, really. The Nuggets, if the Nuggets win, that'll probably be the upset. If it's a Nuggets Heat, or really even Nuggets Celtics finals, are we then gonna say, are people gonna remember this as an asterisk season? Is that, you know, is this bullshit?
Maybe, because Twitter hype beasts get like that. I personally wouldn't. Because if I'm not going to call it an asterisk with the Lakers making, I'm not going to say it with these two teams.
Yeah.
So me personally, I'd say no, but I can absolutely see that being the narrative on Twitter, especially from LeBron fans. They just, you know what I mean? That's just how they are.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
we'll see.
Okay. Well, that is all the basketball we had. We are going to be going live here. What are we doing, Eli?
Yeah. So, we're going to be going live here in a, if you're listening to this, we have already gone live. So the video will be posted, the replay of it at least, on our YouTube channel. If you're listening on audio, keep listening. You'll hear that part coming up here. Dave Klug from the podcast or Pregame HQ and Fantasy Pros. He's a fantasy sports writer / editor. And he's going to be giving us some fantasy advice and things like that, and talking a little bit NFL with us for upcoming games of week two. So stay tuned, and we will see you guys again on the other video.
With the NBA playoffs coming back, something we're going to be seeing a lot is every player's fresh new cut. But you know what else needs a fresh new cut? Your lawn. That's why you should hit up Tavon's Lawn Care. Tavon's Lawn Care LLC is a Black family-owned business located in York, Pennsylvania. Tavon's Lawn Care, or TLC for short, since they provide each job with tender love and care, has been in business for over 10 years. Founded by owner Tavon Parker, TLC aims to provide employment for underprivileged youth while providing great service at a reasonable rate. Visit Tavon's Lawn Care LLC or Tavon's Lawn Care on Facebook and Instagram to view their portfolio and request your cost-free quote today.
What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, as always, Eli Cooper, and I'm joined, as always, by my other co-host, Mike Badzik. How's it going today, man?
It's going good. Excited to learn some things in this episode. I had an abysmal start to my fantasy football season, so I am happy to be here and be a student in this episode.
All right. Yeah, man. So if you're watching on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, all the places we're going live right now, we are joined by Dave from Fantasy Pros and Pregame HQ. He's a fantasy football writer and editor for those outlets. Dave, why don't you give us a little bio on your career so far?
Right on. Well, first of all, thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm from Chicago, been a huge sports fan my whole life. About a year ago, I started working with Fantasy Pros on their news correspondence desk, where we try to be one of the first to break all the major stories. So, you know, obviously Schefter and Pelissero and those guys are beating us, but we try to just correspond that news as quickly as possible. So I do NBA, MLB, and NFL for them. And then on August 1st, I started working with Elvin Ryan and his new website, the Pregame HQ, which I highly recommend checking out. We've been pumping out some great content there. It's thepregamehq.com, and I'm a writer and editor for them.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So we appreciate you coming on the show, man, giving our listeners and us some fantasy advice for week two of the NFL, which we're going to get into. So for those of you tuning in, if you're watching on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, throughout the show, send us any start or sit or fantasy advice questions. We'll try to get to all of them. We'll have some from social media that we had from the last couple of days that we'll be asking Dave towards the end of the episode. So send those to us in the comment section, and we'll place your comment up on screen. You know, like my guy Day Don't Play here, tuning in on Twitter. So thank you guys again for tuning in. If you're listening on audio, obviously we're back from the break. We just talked about the Clippers losing to the Nuggets in game seven in the Eastern Conference Finals as well. And if you're watching on YouTube on the replay, you can catch that on our YouTube channel here. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button that you're seeing. So let's get right into it, man. We got some week two games, a lot of good matchups coming up this week. And, you know, starting with the Eagles, my hometown team, you know, we had a tough loss. We had a tough loss to start the season. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get any easier for us here in week two with the Rams. So Mike, what's one thing you're looking forward to in this game?
I think it's got to be Wentz. I think we have to look at Wentz and say, you know, are you this franchise quarterback or are you not? Week one, it looked like you were not. Now, you know, you've discussed as the Eagle, you know, expert and fan, how he's so much better when Lane Johnson plays. Well, I think Lane Johnson's going to play this week.
Yeah.
So I'll be watching for Carson Wentz to see. You know, I am high on the Rams. I've been high on the Rams. I've been talking about them and how I think that they're going to be one of the best teams in the NFC and make this run. And that involves a lot of things with Jared Goff improving. And their defense being a little bit more opportunistic. But for me, I think the biggest thing is Wentz.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, I think getting Lane Johnson back will help.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to see, you know, a ton of Aaron Donald, I don't think, because he usually plays, you know, a little more interior. So I don't know if that really helps with that specifically. You know, but I think him being back, it looks like Miles Sanders is on track to play as well. So that could certainly help. Is they didn't really look confident in giving the ball to Boston Scott or Corey Clement last week. Neither of those two really got a ton of touches. So Dave, what's your thoughts just on the game in general coming into this one? What are some of the keys for the Eagles and Rams?
Well, I mean, that's the biggest thing for me too, is I'm going to be keeping an eye on Wentz. You know, he's coming off a pretty horrific week one. You already mentioned Lane Johnson, but you also got Alshon Jeffrey out of that game. You had Miles Sanders out of that game. You had DeSean Jackson coming back for his first time in almost a year after that core surgery. He only played, 52% of the snaps or something like that.
Right.
Jalen Reagor was dealing with something. So, I mean, that's a banged up arsenal. It's really tough for anybody to succeed in a situation like that.
Yeah.
So I think people are quick to forget, but, you know, Wentz was a QB10 last year. He was, you know, finished 10th overall. Back in 2018, he was QB5. I mean, when he's got a good staff around him and a good team of players, he can ball out. So I'm hoping that he can just kind of put that one on the shelf behind him and have another vintage Carson Wentz performance this week.
So, assuming Miles Sanders, Lane Johnson are healthy, from a fantasy perspective, are you starting once this week in 10 team leagues?
100%. Yeah. I mean, it's such a cliche in fantasy, but start your studs, and Wentz really is a stud. You know, he's had some injuries that have, made people forget how good he is. But as far as I can see, he's not on the injury report right now. And if he's playing, you got to start him.
Got to start him. So from the Rams perspective, their offense looked a little bit different, without Todd Gurley. First time in a while we've seen them without him, and also without Brandon Cooks, who moved on to the Houston Texans this offseason as well. pretty much look the same though, like as far as their schemes and how they approach the game. Robert Woods looked incredible in week one, you know. So, but Tyler Higbee, someone we thought might be, you know, a little more involved in the offense, had a pretty silent night against the Cowboys. So, Dave, what's your thoughts on Tyler Higbee? Does he bounce back this week?
I don't think so. I wasn't really a big Higbee fan going into this season. If you look at it, you know, he did his best when Gerald Everett was out. And when they've got both of those tight ends healthy, he really hasn't done that much. So I haven't really been a huge Higbee fan. I think, you know, if you drafted him, you put some decent stock into his value. And at this point, you got to ride him out for at least a few more weeks. But there's a lot of good guys popping up on the waiver wire right now. You know, Logan Thomas, he's coming off a really nice week. So there's some other guys that I think you should look out for and at least stash on your bench. You know, ride with Higbee for a little bit, but I don't think it's a terrible idea to start looking elsewhere. Cam Akers, though, he's the guy that I'm going to be keeping a really close eye on this week. You know, it looked like it was Malcolm Brown's backfield, but I'm not really buying it yet. My thought process is that, you know, McVay, a lot of people blame him for all of Gurley's problems. You know, they say that he just ran Gurley into the ground. So McVay, you know, he's a young, flexible coach. I think he's pretty savvy. And I think we're going to see a committee coming out of this backfield in Los Angeles. So Akers, you know, he's still a pretty raw talent. I know he was struggling a little bit in camp with picking up some pass protection. But I think it's going to be kind of a weird hot hand approach in that. So I'm going to be keeping a close eye on Akers in the backfield for sure to see how that pans out.
So are you starting any of these Rams backs this week?
No.
Really? I mean, avoiding all of them.
Can't touch
them. If you absolutely had to, I mean, I'm somebody that invests heavily in running backs when I draft. So I'm not picking anybody up off the waiver wire and starting them this early. But I guess if you had to choose, you know, you'd want to go with Malcolm Brown just because he got the majority of the carries. I think he had 18 last week and Akers had 14. But, you know, you got Daryl Henderson in the mix too. It's, you know, if you're one of those guys that lost your running back early and you don't have a choice, Malcolm Brown's probably the way to go, but I'm avoiding that backfield 100%.
Yeah, and especially with Malcolm Brown, because, like, we kind of saw this last year, right, where he had this, like, explosive week one. Now, it was on less touches, but we saw him have this big week one and then duds, like, for the rest of the season, obviously, as they continued to go to Gurley. Now, granted, there's no Gurley there, so maybe he has more of an opportunity to I don't want to say repeat that performance, but continue to be, you know, a relevant fantasy back and really hold on to this job in general. But, you know, Daryl Henderson was also coming off injury. So, you know, we really don't know how he's going to factor in as far as snap counts and carries and things like that go. Cause I think they still like him. You know what I mean? I don't think they've given up on him just yet. So
yeah,
I think
he's crazy talented.
Yeah. So I don't, you know, long term, I don't really love the idea of Malcolm Brown, you know, or anything like that. Maybe, like you said, if deeper league or if you absolutely need to, you're starting Malcolm Brown, but like not with a lot of confidence, in my opinion.
Right. If you're a Malcolm Brown owner at this point, I think the best thing you could do is hope for a big week two and then try to trade him. Cause I think everybody kind of realizes that he's going to start trending downward over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, any last thoughts on Eagles Rams?
No, I mean, I agree 100% with you, Dave, on the Rams backfield situation. And actually, you know, assuming it's just two of them now, if Henderson throws his name in the ring, that's going to really be, you know, anytime you're in a three-man backfield, it's tough to justify a start for any of them. But if it's an Akers and Brown split, you know, there is a world where both of them are still viable options, especially in deeper leagues. I think Buffalo has potential for that, too, with Moss and Singletary.
Yeah,
like there. Sometimes you get teams who do run enough. I know the Rams are, you know, seen as high power, but they actually do run the ball quite a bit. You know, you could actually see both of them fantasy relevant for the rest of the year.
Yeah. So, Dave, real quick before we move on to our next matchup, any DFS players, sleepers that you might be looking into for this game particularly?
You know, after just bashing on the backfield, Akers actually is a solid DFS play. He's not somebody I want to pick up in my leagues. He's not somebody I would have drafted, but you know, he's got some pop. You know, if he gets he can break one off at any time. So you know, given his, you know, cheaper price, he's a pretty solid play that you could pick up in DFS this week. And then you just got to cross your fingers and hope he can rip off a big one.
Yeah. Right. All right. All right. So let's get moving on. I think this one might arguably be the best game of the week. Ravens versus Texans, Lamar Jackson versus Deshaun Watson, two of the, you know, top young QBs in the league coming up this week. But that Ravens defense is pretty stingy coming into this one. So we'll start with Mike here. What are some things you're looking for in this matchup as far as the game in general?
As far as the game in general and not necessarily fantasy, but it, kind of fantasy related, is Deshaun Watson and what he does without DeAndre Hopkins. You know, he was probably the angriest man on Sunday. You know, he played Thursday night, and then Sunday he's probably watching the games and just thinking to himself, like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, we gave up this guy for nothing. Like, so he was probably the angriest dude. Like, you just wonder what he's going to be able to do without D-Hop and with the weapons he does have. Now, he had a pretty relevant fantasy performance on Thursday. A lot of it was rushing. But, you know, I want to see what he does. And then the Ravens, like, so I might have to be eating crow about the Ravens. And Sean says Ravens by 30. Before the season, I did pick the Steelers to win that division, and I was expecting a little bit of a comeback for Lamar Jackson as far as throwing the ball, where, like, doesn't look like that's about to happen. They looked fantastic, albeit against the Brownies. But so I might be wrong about that one, and I'd be fine too. But yeah, Lamar has been great. We'll see if he can keep that up. And then, yeah, I think Deshaun Watson, I want to know how is he gonna move forward without DeAndre Hopkins?
Yeah, so that's the biggest thing, especially in this is going to be one of the tougher defenses that Deshaun Watson sees all year. Honestly, they made Baker Mayfield look like a high school quarterback last week. So, you know, I don't expect it to be that bad for Deshaun Watson. But, you know, without DeAndre Hopkins, this is a really tough match, especially because that Ravens secondary is so stingy. So, Dave, what are some of the keys to this one for Ravens versus Texans?
Well, you know, it looks like Cooks is still dealing with some sort of hamstring injury. I mean, I feel like that guy's been on the injury report for 3 years straight now. I don't know if he'll ever get off of it. But, you know, you mentioned the DeAndre Hopkins trade, and they brought in David Johnson, and I get it. You know, Bill O'Brien caught so much flack for that trade. He tried playing it off saying it was a financial thing, and you saw it. You know, DeAndre Hopkins just got paid big, and I don't think Houston had that money to pay DeAndre Hopkins. But, you know, I've been in love with David Johnson this offseason. And he showed week one, you know, that he's going to be a pretty valuable part. So Bill O'Brien, you know, he gave the ball to Carlos Hyde 245 times last year. Carlos Hyde had 245 carries. So you don't think that they're going to give even more to David Johnson? I think that guy's going to be a steal this year. I'm huge on David Johnson. I'm expecting him to kind of be the focal point of the offense, and we'll see if they can, you know, get away from, you know, leaning so heavily on DeAndre Hopkins. I think David Johnson is going to be the new guy that they're going to be kind of revolving that game plan around.
Yeah, and I was actually pretty high on him too, because I felt like this was going to be kind of like a restart for him, you know, moving on from Arizona after, you know, essentially losing the job to Kenyon Drake and really even Chase Edmonds, if we're being honest. But, you know, I think this offense is a little bit better for him, and we saw it in week one. He was great. Not sure that those results will be the same here in week two again against a tough Ravens defense. Yeah. So before we get into the fantasy aspect, let's make some predictions here. Who do we have out of Ravens and Texans?
I got the Ravens for sure. You know, it's hard to bet against them right now. I mean, what they've been doing since Lamar Jackson took over is just unstoppable. You know, you just got to assume that they're going to win every single week unless they get proved wrong.
Yeah. I'm not picking the Ravens here. The way they looked in week one, 7-point favorites on the road. Now I don't know what home field advantage means this year, but 7-point favorites on the road, like, and I'm down on the Texans here. I think this is I saw a comment about Bill O'Brien and all the bad trades he's made. I think this is maybe the year where it starts to catch up with him, and maybe it's a down year for the Texans. But so I got to go with the Ravens.
Yeah, I'm taking the Ravens. I'm taking them to cover in this one too. So, you know, I think that's pretty much a no-brainer. I just wanted your prediction so that you as a Steelers fan would have to say that the Ravens are winning again.
Oh, brother.
That's all I really
need. Listen, I am the least biased host on this show, okay? I never let personal team affiliations affect my picks.
But before we move on to the next game, can we just talk about Mark Andrews just for a second? Because I was a huge Mark Andrews hater this offseason. You know, everybody was saying he's going to have this regression, and I was one of them. You know, this guy was touchdown dependent last year, but he went out last week, only had 5 catches and turned 2 of them into a touchdown. And the biggest thing is he had never played more than 56% of his snaps before. He played 71% last week, so I'm eating crow on all that Mark Andrews hate. That dude looks like the real deal right now.
Yeah, definitely. So let's before we move on to the next one, let's talk about some fantasy guys here in this matchup. So Deshaun Watson, 10-team league. Are you still riding with him this week, like even against the tough Ravens defense?
Yeah, I've actually got him as a QB6 just because – I'm sorry, like the 6th overall quarterback because – I think they're going to be down, and that's kind of when Deshaun Watson is at his best. You know, he's a competitor, and a lot of those slow-moving games where they're just kind of churning out yards, those are the ones that he struggles in. He can usually hold his own in a shootout, so I expect to see a big game from Deshaun Watson this week.
Agreed. So any fantasy players for season-long that you're looking at might be a little higher value than normal this week?
Mark Andrews, man.
Mark Andrews.
Until he proves me wrong, that dude is a touchdown machine.
Yeah. All right. So next game, which I think this one, you know, I know I said this about Ravens Texans, but I think this one here is the game of the week. We got Pats versus Seahawks. Cam Newton, Sunday Night Football against Russell Wilson. Both teams coming off of Week 1 wins. So let's talk about the Pats a little bit because Cam Newton looked really good, looked really healthy again, you know, in his first game back after a pretty, you know, almost a year off essentially, and then a pretty sketchy offseason for him. It looked, we weren't sure where he was going to end up, whether he was even going to be a starter, you know, for a guy who was a former MVP. So Dave, is Cam Newton a top 10 fantasy quarterback for you this week against the Seahawks?
I think it's tough to put him in the top 10 right now, but he is somebody that I'm pretty high on. Drafted him in a lot of my drafts, and I've got him sitting on my bench right now. You know, he's going to be a great bye week fill-in. I think he's got to prove a little bit more. But, you know, there's no question that a quarterback that can use his legs has a special value. And he was 2nd in yards behind Kyler Murray last week. He had 75 yards. You know, everyone was expecting to see 2020 Cam Newton, but somehow – Bill Belichick was able to pull out 2015 Cam Newton. I mean, he was just balling. So, I mean, if he can do it again for another week, I think you got to have the conversation that he becomes a weekly starter in the top 10.
And see, I think that's the thing about, you know, we weren't really sure about Cam Newton because we've never seen the Patriots with under Bill Belichick with a quarterback like Cam Newton, just from play style in general, right?
Yeah.
Were they going to use him like Cam Newton, or were they going to try to like protect him, or you know what I mean? Because of all the health injuries, they're like, nah, like go be Cam Newton. You know what I mean? Ran him 15 times often on the goal line. You know, so to me, that gives him a lot of, from a fantasy perspective, that gives him a lot of value. And really, I think it's big for this offense that kind of doesn't really have like a big play threat. I think it, you know, having Cam Newton as a true dual threat and not really like, you know, holding back that part of his game kind of opens things up for them offensively. I think he's going to have to do more with his arm than he did in week one, of course. You know, I only threw the ball 19 times and for like 150, just over 150 yards. And no touchdowns, obviously, especially here against the Seahawks, he's going to have to do more with his arm. So that's probably the thing that I'm looking at. How does, when his volume has to go up throwing the ball, you know, does the efficiency drop?
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, it certainly can. But, you know, one thing that we've seen Bill Belichick do throughout his entire time as a coach is adapt to the personnel that he has. You know, when they've got good running backs, they run the heck out of the ball. When they've got good receivers, I mean, you remember with Randy Moss, what did he catch? 21, 22 touchdowns. And I mean, they were airing it out that year. So he adapts to the personnel that he has. Exactly. And right now, the number one person on that personnel list should be Cam Newton. He's their most valuable player for the time being. And, you know, we've seen a lot of teams have success, you know, the Ravens with a running quarterback. So I think Bill Belichick's going to adapt, and they're likely going to be a pretty run heavy team this year.
Yeah,
they think they are too. And now 15 carries for Cam, that's a lot. I don't know if like if that's a sustainable number, like 15 carries, like for a quarterback. And it's also like the way he runs, like Lamar Jackson, 15 carries is a lot different than Cam Newton, 15 carries. Like Lamar is going to be, you know, he's going to get out of bounds and slide pretty, you know, a little more eagerly than Cam is, who wants to get every yard. And a lot of time he's running around the goal line there where there's really no room for him to slide. Like he's almost forced into contact there when he's the power back on the goal line. Now it's good for a fantasy perspective. You know, yeah. if he's the power back on the goal line, like that means a lot of 6-point touchdowns instead of 4-point touchdowns for Cam. So I like him from that perspective. I think maybe they need to find a little bit better of a balance with between the rushing and the passing, though.
Yeah, agreed. So, Dave, let's talk from a DFS standpoint in this game. Give me one player each team that you're looking at from a possible, you know, DFS standpoint this week.
Tyler Lockett, you know, he's been slipping down a little bit. Everyone's expecting DK Metcalf to come in there and just supplant his role as the number one wide receiver. Both guys got 8 targets last week. The difference is DK had 4 catches. Tyler Lockett brought in all 8 of his. I'm sure you guys saw that they highlighted on Red Zone a few times. DK had a huge drop. He struggled with drops last year. Russell Wilson looks his way a lot, but if he keeps struggling with drops, I think that, you know, he's going to start leaning on his veteran Tyler Lockett, who's as sure-handed as they come. So I like Tyler Lockett. Just you know, he's consistently ranked in that, you know, 20 to 25 area, but he can pop off as, you know, a top 5 guy any single week. And then the guy that I like on the Patriots, and I'm sure I'll catch some flack for this, but I like Sony Michel. Like I said, you know, I think that the Patriots are going to adapt to the personnel that they have. And, you know, Cam Newton, like you said, he can't carry the ball 15 times a week, but I think they are going to start leaning a little bit more heavily on the run. And I expect to see Sony Michel be most involved in that.
Yeah, I think we see more involvement from Sony Michel as well, especially from week one. Like, you know, go back to Mike's point, you know, Cam ran the ball 15 times. It's probably not sustainable. So that, you know, probably bodes well for Sony Michel going forward, that you're expecting a little more carries in that for him, at least.
I was kind of worried about Julian Edelman coming into the year with Cam. I didn't know how much they were going to use him. It wasn't going to be like how they did with Tom, certainly. But actually, he was pretty solid there. 7 targets, I think, 5 catches. Now, do you have anything nice to say about DK Metcalf? Because I'm a DK Metcalf owner.
Same.
Anyway, you kind of hurt me with that.
You know, I like him. The guy's just a freak athlete. You can't deny that. But yeah, that's all I got to say nice about him. The guy's a freak athlete. Oh, but I really want him to reel those drops in, though. You know, that's not a way to sustain a long, healthy career is if you keep dropping balls.
Yeah.
Definitely. So now let's move on to the Monday night game, Saints versus Raiders. Now in this one, you know, we had some pretty big injury news. Michael Thomas, who was pretty ineffective in week one, and mostly because he has this high ankle sprain that he's dealing with. And it's been reported that he's going to miss out on, it looks like several weeks from what they're saying with this high ankle sprain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's obviously he's a huge part of the Saints offense. So, you know, Mike, we'll start with you just from a game standpoint, non-fantasy standpoint. How do they make up for that production?
I don't know, especially on the quick passes. Maybe Kamara gets more involved. He would be the natural guy. I would think if they want to do the quick pass thing on first and second down, maybe their screens and slips to or swings to Kamara instead of the slants to Michael Thomas. I don't know. This was my big question for Dave, because I'm a Michael Thomas owner in one league, and I'm thinking, like, who do I replace him with? Like, who's making up the production? Is it Emmanuel Sanders? Is it Jared Cook gets more looks? Is it Taysom Hill as a, you know, maybe they just do more funky stuff with him? I'll ask Dave.
Well, I think Jared Cook is kind of the you know, the easy answer. I think that Jared Cook is definitely going to see a little uptick in targets. He's got a similar build to Michael Thomas. He's a big guy, strong hands. You know, he can body up on a defender and get that. But I'm going to have all my eyes on Emmanuel Sanders because I want to see what this guy can do. You know, he got brought in new. He doesn't have the same rapport with Drew Brees that a lot of other guys there do have. But, you know, he's got a history of success with multiple quarterbacks. He's moved around in a few different teams. He's had quarterback changes, and he's always been able to grind it out. He's never had a quarterback as good as Drew Brees. So yeah. I think this is an opportunity for him to really, really step up and show everybody how good of a football player he actually is. So, you know, it's not somebody that I'd be, you know, throwing trade offers out for or buying in DFS, but I'm going to have really close eyes on him this week because I want to see if he can step up.
Hmm. Yeah, so and one of the names that we've seen thrown out there is Tre'Quan Smith, has been kind of floated out there. Are you – obviously you're picking him up from the waiver wire if you're playing him at all. Are you – is this someone that can give you any kind of fantasy value this week?
Yeah, you know, right now you got more vacated targets with Michael Thomas being out than if any other receiver was out in the league. So I think it's worth, you know, a shot in the dark in DFS. Pick him up, you know, hope for the best. But I think Cook is going to be the guy that's going to benefit the most from MT being out.
Agreed. Yeah, so, you know, in this case, let's talk about the Raiders a little bit. We saw first-round pick Henry Ruggs look pretty decent, caught a long ball, almost scored in his NFL debut. Now, Saints have a pretty tough secondary. Could be a little bit of a challenge for him. Is Henry Ruggs startable as a flex play this week?
I think so. You know, Gruden has been singing his praises. He said that I don't know if you saw his quote, but he said that Ruggs was actually hurt during that entire game and labeled him as one of the greats, saying, you know, being able to play through injury is what the great players do. He said that he's looking to get him more involved.
I love Gruden.
I mean, that dude, seriously, how can you not? But, yeah, when you got a guy with wheels like that, sky's the limit. You know, all it takes is one play. He can score from anywhere on the field. So he's a risky flex play, but he's also got some of the highest reward of anybody else in that tier.
Yeah, definitely. Mike, any thoughts, last thoughts on Saints Raiders?
I have a question, and we will not, you know, give names of who offered who what. Would you accept this? Who would you rather have? Who would you rather have? DK Metcalf and Henry Ruggs offered for Joe Mixon?
You know, I'm a running back guy. I'd go with Mixon on that one.
Okay.
So. Okay. Yeah,
he declined my trade. He declined it.
Well, here's why. Let me defend myself. All right.
So hold on, Mike. This was you trying to get.
I tried to give up Mixon for Metcalf and Ruggs, and Eli would not take it.
I'd take it, Eli.
I was going to take the trade. I really was. Here's the problem. So we're in a 12-team league with two flex spots. We have an extra flex, no defense. So my receiving core right now is DJ Moore, Metcalf, Gallup, Ruggs. Those are like my four guys. My bench is pretty thin, as you can imagine, a 12-team league with is that kind of depth is a little tough on your bench. Yeah. So I'm giving up two of those four guys and kind of like relying on Gallup as my number two receiver. And I have Travis Kelce, which kind of helps, right? So you don't need as strong of a receiving core, I guess, if you have Travis Kelce. And then I have Drake and Eckler as my running backs. So I need Mixon for the running back depth because I have no one behind these two. But if I give up both of those receivers, I have no receiver depth, like at all.
I like it, man. I like Gallup. I'm huge on Gallup here.
I like Gallup too. My only issue is like I have two other flex. I'm going to have another flex spot to fill. Right. And there's not really going to be anyone viable to go there. So I have Higbee on my bench. I can live with him as my tight end. So I was trying to move. I'm trying to move Kelce for like a wide receiver too. And no one wants to give up a wide receiver too for Kelce in our league as well. Wow. So I'm trying to wheel and deal and try to fill up my roster.
Greg,
and
it wasn't working out. Was in trouble because we have this extra flex spot and I have Mike Evans and Mike Evans is hurt. So I'm hurting right now, Dave. Okay, because we have this 12 team extra flex spot. I'm trying to get these two guys for Joe Mixon. You know, I'm thinking Eli's my podcast partner. You know, he'll sympathize, he'll help me out. I mean, we're like best friends. He's basically the godfather of my dog.
Oh, come on.
Come on. Like, I figured he would help me out. Nothing. No love.
Oh, man. I'm not going to get involved in this one too much. It sounds like it's getting personal at this point.
Listen, so
getting the dog involved. Come on, man.
Yeah. And see what, see, I, so, and actually Chris, I'm glad Crystal made this comment here. We had a discussion about Kelce, Jonathan Taylor for Travis Kelce. Fair note. Fair enough.
I think it's fair. Yeah. I like it.
Fair. Sure. Okay. So you're, yeah.
I mean, was this pre Marlon Mack injury or was this after the
this
injury?
This is after. This was, this was today. So
yeah, I think
all
it's
information
fair.
Was there.
Had this happened prior to the injury, there, it could have been a little sketchy, but right now, I mean, there's no reason that JT can't finish top five.
Yeah. So my thing is, you know, so now I can't make that trade anymore because she traded away her backup running back. Now Jonathan Taylor's off the table. So it was just, it was a mess, but now that we're on to fantasy advice, let's keep it going. We're gonna take some questions from the socials here. We had a few on Twitter for start sit, so we're gonna start there. Let me pull those up here. So first one that we had, which is an interesting one, PPR, Tariq Cohen. He's got the Giants this week taking on or Ronald Jones playing against Carolina again. PPR scoring format.
I mean, this one's tough for me because I'm a huge Bears fan. You know, I'm sure you see the signed Cutler helmet right over here. I'm a huge Bears
Cutler's
fan.
Cutler's my guy.
How could he not be? I mean, he's great. But and I'm also a huge Leonard Fournette fan. But I think that Rojo is the right move here. You know, I think that Fournette's the better runner, better blocker, better pass catcher, all that. And I think eventually he's going to run away with the job. But right now, you know, it's Rojo's backfield. It's going to take Fournette a couple weeks to get up to speed. You know, Josh Jacobs just gashed the Giants for, what was it, 100 – or I'm sorry, Carolina for, what was it, 150 yards or something like that and three touchdowns. So I think until Carolina shows that they can stop the run, I think Rojo's a move this week.
Yeah, see, and I like Rojo as well, at least until, you know, Leonard Fournette starts to, like, creep into this backfield. If he does at all, we don't really know. But Cohen's just like, he doesn't really have the volume. I don't think to, you know, really give himself, you know, the edge there, even in PPR.
Yeah. If he couldn't keep off Peyton Barber last year, he's not going to be able to keep up Leonard Fournette this year.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we'll see how that ends up playing out. So the next one we have comes from Adam Koffler on Twitter. And his was in half PPR. We're picking one of these three guys, Deontay Johnson, J.K. Dobbins, Zach Moss. Who are you starting out of these three guys?
I mean, that's not a bad problem to have. If you got all three of those guys, I mean, you can plug all of them in, and they're all solid flex options. But I got to go Deontay Johnson. You know, we haven't seen Big Ben playing at home in a little while. But, you know, if my memory serves me correctly, Big Ben balls out in Pittsburgh. So, you know, Johnson's coming off 10 targets on Monday night. Everyone forgets that because Juju was the one that had the huge game with a couple touchdowns. But Pittsburgh's offense, when Big Ben is under center, they've always been able to support two top wide receivers. You know, it was Mike Wallace, and I can't remember who else back in the day. And then it was Antonio Brown and Juju for a little while. I think it's going to be Juju and Deontay right now. So, I think you got to go Deontay in this one.
Okay. Yeah. See, I like Deontay Johnson too. I actually have him in a couple of my leagues. I'm in 8 fantasy leagues, which is just, I'm never going to do that again. Two of them are paid and one's a dynasty league. Those are the three that I actually care about because they're with my friends. The other five, I got carried away with drafting this year. Never doing that again.
Drafting's the fun part. Managing them during the season, though.
Right, exactly.
Now so, I'm just like, as on the app, I'm just scrolling through like
that. Right, exactly. So I think next year I'm just going to do mock drafts to deal with that.
Get that pick somehow.
We have a follow-up question here from Twitter from Mike's younger brother.
Hey.
We have so Deontay Johnson or Emmanuel Sanders this week.
I'm still going to go Deontay Johnson because I think he's got a much higher floor. And if I'm being honest, I think he's got a higher ceiling too. You know, Emmanuel Sanders, I think he's going to be a solid option this week. I know we talked about him a little bit, wanted to keep an eye on him. But I think Deontay Johnson's the real deal.
Yeah, agreed. I think Deontay Johnson is definitely, especially in Pittsburgh's offense, is certainly going to be.
I remember when Juju had his breakout year, you know, he was balling out every single week once that season started. And it took people almost 8 weeks until they finally started putting some respect on his name and putting him in that conversation as a top 10. And everyone was saying, yep, well, you know, Antonio Brown's the number one wide receiver, so we can't, you know, put Juju up in there. But Big Ben, he throws the ball 600 times a year. You know, you can support two receivers. And I think Deontay Johnson is going to have a huge breakout this season.
So we're going to take this next question from our YouTube comments here, our frequent all-in podcast collaborator, Deshaun Turner. We are in a two-quarterback. I'm pretty sure this is for our Dynasty League. No, it's not, actually. But anyway, two-quarterback league, obviously. We're looking at Russ, Cam, Kyler. All right. Starting two. So who gets the boot here?
Before I give this advice, are either of you guys playing against Deshaun this week? I mean, should I?
I am not. No. Okay. I played him in two leagues last week, so
sabotage him anyway. I'm free of him. That guy.
Yeah,
anyway. I love all three of those guys this year, but I think it's kind of a no-brainer. You got to go with Russ and Kyler right now. Cam's coming off a real hot week one, but I think you want to see it a little bit more consistently before you start putting him in your lineup. I mean, Russ, he's been a top guy for years now. Kyler, you know, he's that guy that everyone was talking about being the huge sleeper this year. Yeah. He showed up, you know, he led the league in rushing week one for quarterbacks. Yeah. So I think Russ and Kyler is kind of the no-brainer on this one.
Agreed. I like Kyler a lot. I took him in our Dynasty League because, you know, long-term, I think he's going to have an excellent career. So I'm a big fan of Kyler Murray as well.
Yeah, I mean, he was great last year, and people were talking about him as a sleeper before DeAndre Hopkins came in town. Yeah. So you've already got a guy that's got this breakout potential, and then you give him what I believe is the best wide receiver in the league. I mean, he's poised for a huge year.
Yeah. So next one we have is also coming from Twitter, Alex Burns. And maybe we got the answer to this one, you know, kind of with the Michael Thomas news. But rest of the season, Jared Cook, Hunter Henry, who you taking?
I'm going Jared Cook. Tight ends are kind of a crapshoot once you get out of the top three this year. You know, you got Kelsey, you got Kittle, you got Andrews. And then after that, when you're looking at like 4 through 20, I mean, you can make an argument to just shuffle those guys around anywhere. So what I'm looking at is the teams that they play for. You know, the Saints, they're high powered offense. They're going to score. Tyrod Taylor did not look good week one. It seemed like he was leaning on Mike Williams more than anybody. I think if you put them both in a bubble, I think that Hunter Henry is the better football player. But given the teams that they play for, I'd prefer Jared Cook over Hunter Henry this year.
Can I follow up with another tight end question then? And maybe we should have talked about this when we talked about the Eagles. But what do you make of the Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert conversation where, you know, obviously Ertz is year in and year out one of these top guys, but in week one, you know, Goddard was getting the majority of targets and catches. How would you treat those two going forward?
Yeah, that's a tough one because both of those guys are crazy talented. You know, the big reason that you were able to start both guys last year is because they didn't have any wide receivers. You know, Alshon was hurt, Sean Jackson was hurt, but now, you know, Alshon is still hurt, but he should be coming back at some point in time. Deshaun Jackson's there. They drafted Rhaegar, so it kind of muddies the waters a little bit. I think having that wide receiver core that they have now that they didn't have last year, I think all that does is lower the ceiling for both of those players. Yeah. So I've been avoiding them because they're both really talented, and Wentz likes them both, and it's really tough to decide who's going to be the better player week in and week out.
Agreed. So next one we have is coming from Twitter as well, from Troy King. He asks, Preston Williams or Paris Campbell in half-point PPR this week?
This is a tough one, but I like Paris Campbell. You know, he's already displayed a pretty great rapport with Phillip Rivers. He took a lot of his snaps out of the slot, which we saw what Phillip Rivers has done over the last couple of years with Keenan Allen coming out of the slot. Yeah. I mean, he likes throwing to running backs. He likes throwing to tight ends. He likes throwing to slot receivers. He likes those really high-percentage, easy throws. Preston Williams, you know, it looked like he had a dud last week. I think he only had two catches. I don't think it was anything crazy, but I believe he actually saw seven targets. So the Patriots are a pretty stingy pass defense, even with all the players that opted out. You know, Bill Belichick always gets those guys to play hard on defense. So I, you know, it's a tough one, but if I had to choose, I'd be going with Paris Campbell.
There's Kevin. Okay.
Yeah.
And so we have another comment from Crystal on YouTube. What do you think about Noah Fant? So where's he ranked amongst your tight ends?
I'm glad somebody asked. I love Noah Fant this year. He's a guy that I targeted in just about every single one of my leagues. You know, Drew Lock, he looked a little raw last year. He made some, you know, bonehead rookie mistakes, but I expect him to take a huge step forward this year. You know, I'm a Bears fan, but I live in Colorado, so I get to follow the Broncos pretty closely. Gotcha. I mean, anybody that saw Noah Fant play week one on Monday, I mean, he's a grown man. He gets the ball when he wants it. You know, I really, really like Noah Fant this year. You know, as far as rankings, like I said, it's so hard to rank once you get past those top three. But, you know, he's, in my opinion, a tight end one, albeit a little bit on the lower side.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of Noah Fant, too. Not only this year, but just long term, I think he has a ton of potential. So, next question we have comes from Sean as well. This one is a start sit between Juju or Kenny Galladay this week.
I'm going Juju, definitely. You know, Galladay, he's coming off a hamstring injury, and those linger. You know, he was unable to suit up last week. I think he's still technically questionable for this week, but even if he gets the green light, I'm going with Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, he looked awesome this week. Yeah. You know, this is the first time we've seen Ben Roethlisberger play without Antonio Brown in a while. He's got to find a new wide receiver number one, and I think that's going to be Juju this year.
Yeah. And, you know, so that was the thing, right, is that, you know, with Antonio Brown leaving last year, we weren't really sure whether Juju was ready to step into that role, and we couldn't really figure it out last year, you know, given the quarterback situation after Big Ben goes down in week two. Week one, if you were someone who thought Juju had that talent and capability, I think week one kind of, you know, eases that or confirms that for you so far. Yeah. You know, so I think Juju has, you know, top tier, high end wide receiver two, maybe low end wide receiver one.
Yeah, I'm putting him in low end wide receiver one. If he stays healthy and Ben stays healthy, I mean, that's the biggest question mark with that situation right now is both of their healths. But if those guys can both stay healthy, there's no reason that he isn't finishing inside the top 10.
Agreed.
Love it.
So we're going to finish this one off as far as ranking advice, things like that. We have one more. Jonathan Taylor, obviously, after the Marlon Mack injury, he's done for the year. A lot of people were high on Jonathan Taylor coming into the season because we kind of knew how injury prone, for one, Marlon Mack was on a contract year and probably on his way out. So we knew where they were going to phase Jonathan Taylor into this offense, you know, coming into the year. Now Mack's out of the equation. What's his ceiling? And then what's his rest of the season ranking realistically?
Well, I think his ceiling is, you know, the number one running back in fantasy football. I don't think there's any reason that he couldn't. I had him rated as the best rookie coming into the draft this year. So you take what I believe to be the best rookie and put him behind what I believe to be the best offensive line.
Yeah.
And then put him with a quarterback that loves checking down to running backs. I mean, that's just a recipe for a huge, huge season. He looks smooth on the routes that he was running last week. I think the one thing that, you know, can really hold him back a little bit is how Nyheim Hines gets into the mix.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the scary thing right now. You don't know how this backfield is going to shake out, but, you know, they want to keep Hines in there. Phil Rivers, you know, targeted Hines quite a few times last week. So I think it, you know, worst case scenario though, I don't think he finishes outside the top 20 this year.
Yeah. I think you could lock him in top 20 for sure. Especially because what I was really encouraged with in week one was his passing game involvement. We knew Hines, you know, was going to get that kind of involvement. You know, Phillip Rivers loves to throw to running backs, you know, so, but if Jonathan Taylor can consistently get you two or three catches additionally on top of the, you know, workload he's going to get rushing. Yeah. I mean, I don't see why, you know, he can't be, for this season, a top 10 running back or an RB1, and then long term, I think his ceiling is through the roof as well. I have him I have him in Dynasty, so that's good news for me.
Hey, that's a good Dynasty stash right there. Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of people keep trying to compare the situation in Indianapolis right now to what the Chargers had going on.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a dangerous game because there's so many other factors. But, you know, everyone's expecting Hines to take on that Eckler role. And if he does, that could actually be pretty bad for Jonathan Taylor's value, though. Yeah. You know, Eckler had a lot of red zone touches last year. And I think everybody with that huge powerhouse offensive line was expecting Jonathan Taylor anytime they get in within the 5 yard line, just, you know, pound the rock until they get in. Right. Phillip Rivers, though, he really likes to check down in the red zone. You'll see him take a snap out of the shotgun. And if he's got a running back lined up on a linebacker, he'll take that one-on-one coverage and try to check down in the end zone. So, Hines could end up cutting into the goal line carries a little bit. That's the one thing that I'd be nervous about.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously high ceiling for Jonathan Taylor. We'll see, you know, how that backfield plays out without Marlon Mack going forward. And I think we'll finish up here. We have some a general fantasy advice question on just approach in season long. So question here is, what's your overall strategy on the waiver wire? So whether it's, you know, we'll talk a little bit about the snake waiver wire. And then also for auction wires where you have a budget and you're buying players, what's your strategy in maneuvering on the waiver wire?
Well, just to give you an example, I dropped $32 on Hines this morning, 32 of my 100 free agent dollars for the year. I mean, I always go after those running backs that can pop off. You saw James Conner was a league winner a couple of years ago. He went undrafted in every single league.
Yeah.
And then week one, everyone snagged him off the waiver wire, and I think he was on something crazy. It was like 38% of championship teams or something. So there's always those guys that pop up. A lot of people take the approach of wanting to hold on to their waiver priority and their free agent or their auction money as long as possible. I've got no problem spending that early. I used it early last year on Darren Waller. I used it early 2 years ago on James Conner. You know, these first couple weeks, there's so much speculation in the off season. You know, we can sit here and talk about everything happening in summer camps and what happened last year and, you know, how this guy likes playing with other players, but really until we see it in game action, that's when you start to make those, you know, better conclusions. So I think that if there's guys available right now, Benny Snell look great. Benny Snell's a guy that if he's on your waiver wire, go after him. I know we're kind of most people run waivers Wednesday morning, so we might have missed it already. But right. You know, Benny Snell's a guy that you should have been going after. I know I was kind of talking bad about Malcolm Brown, but realistically, I mean, he's a guy that you could pick up, and he could be a year-long flex play. And if you can get somebody like that off the waiver wire, you know, you're hoping that in the fifth or sixth round, you can get somebody that you can play in your flex every single week. So if you're able to snag somebody off the waiver wire, that's crazy valuable.
Yeah, definitely. So, and then last thing we have, just from a strategic standpoint, so it's a little early to maybe, you know, consider this now, but say you're three, maybe four weeks, maybe too late, but let's say you're 3 weeks in, you don't quite have a win yet, or you're 4 weeks in sitting at 1-3, something like that. What's your strategy to a bad start in fantasy? Like, are you hitting the waiver wire heavy? Are you looking to kind of move your best players for, you know, a multitude of guys? Let's, you know, say you have McCaffrey or an elite player on just stuck on a bad team. Are you moving him, trying to fill out the rest of your roster and try to get as many pieces back as you can? Or are you trying to play the waiver wire and hoping, you know, something hits?
So like you lose a guy like Evans and you've got Mixon available. Do you try to trade Mixon for two guys? Something like that.
Exactly like that, Dave.
Yeah, I think that's what you got to do. And that's something, you know, we've got a guy in my league right now, my hometown league with my buddies, and he drafted Michael Thomas. He drafted Chris Godwin. He drafted Miles Sanders. And I mean, everybody that he took, all of his top picks are out right now. So what he's trying to do is trade those players that are currently injured in hopes for some high upside guys. So, yeah. You know, you've got Joshua Kelly, you've got Hines, like we talked about earlier, and these guys, even Leonard Fournette right now, you know, he's not doing anything right now, but a lot of people see the potential that he has. So I think that's what you got to do. If you're just off to a brutal start, it's tough to bite that bullet, but bring in a package of three or four guys with high upside. Rookies are always guys that take a little bit longer to develop. So, yeah. You know, it's tough getting rid of a guy like Christian McCaffrey or Michael Thomas or something like that. But if you can get a package of young players with upside, I think that's a move you got to make.
Yeah. And see, you know, this is my first year playing in a dynasty league. So like for me, I think in dynasty, that's a pretty easy question, right? It's like, all right, well, this year rebuild. I'm not going to be good. Right. Go into rebuild mode. But like in a one season kind of thing, it's kind of hard. Cause you're like, all right, well, if I trade McCaffrey and he, you know what I mean? These other guys I don't get back aren't doing anything. Well, one, I can't get any worse than what I am. But like, you know what I mean? It's like you said, it's always hard to let go of those, you know, top tier guys, especially when you invested so much draft capital in them. It's really hard.
Right. I'd say something to be really careful about too, if you find yourself in a situation like that, is that if you're trading away your top player for a package, you don't want to trade him away to a team that's sitting in first or second place.
Right.
Because, you know, then it just kind of ruins the league for everybody else. Yeah. And I've seen that happen before where some guys just got a loaded roster and then some guy who's out of it just makes some BS trade towards the end of the year, hoping that it can turn his season around. And then you've got the first place team ended up with Kelce or McCaffrey or something like that.
Right.
So I think you got to be fair that, you know, you're making a trade that is helping you, but also isn't going to ruin the league for everybody else. You know, right. Nobody wants the league taco throwing a wrench into the league.
Yeah,
right. That's a good tip. Fantasy integrity is everything.
Yes.
100%.
Yes.
100%.
Absolutely. And hopefully you have a good commish / you know, veto system, however your league does it. To kind of avoid those kind of things from happening. You know, so we actually had something like that. I'm not sure if you were in the league yet then, Mike, but we had something like that happen 2 years ago. Mm. Of course, I was the commissioner when this happened. So it all fell to me. The group chat was going crazy. it all stemmed from, you know, the owners in the league voted to push the deadline back, which was a huge mistake. Okay, and then towards the end of the year, guy tries to trade away like Le'Veon Bell, I think it was, or something like that. And it would have been a fair trade, right? If you're looking at all that he gave up for Bell, but it's like, okay, you're not going to make the playoffs regardless of what happens here. So yeah. Like, you know what I mean? It's not a trade that really should go through.
So what we do in my league is we had the same problem. A few years ago, we had some guy, we're allowed two keepers, and some kid drafted Chubb, who was going to be a great keeper the next year, and his season was over. So the other guy's season was over, and what he did was he gave up David Johnson and Keenan Allen, who were both having awesome seasons, gave away his two top picks so he can pull in Chubb and have the good keeper for next year. So what we started doing after that is now after week four, we look at the bottom teams, and we vote as a league whether that team is allowed to trade. So if you've got a guy who's sitting at 0-6, you know, we're going to sit down as a league and we're going to say, hey, you know, Jim Bob over here is sitting at 0-6. Should he be allowed to trade? And if six people say, you know, no, we're cutting trading for him, then there's no trades with that team for the rest of the season.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. And that's in a dynasty league from what it sounds like, where you have keepers where, you know, I don't know if you guys trade draft picks or anything like that or how that really works, but interesting that that's an approach that you guys take in a league with keepers.
And this, we do two keepers and then redraft the rest. So that's kind of why we had to throw
that quirky rule
in there because, it's a little bit different than a full-blown dynasty, but it's enough that, you know, one guy who's sitting in last place could really ruin the league for the rest of the people.
Right.
Right, because in that case, right, you're only doing two. When you do keepers, you lose that draft pick that player was taken in, right? Is that how you guys operate, or
ours is a little bit different? We do the top everybody that you draft after the second round is available as a keeper. So your first two rounds are off limits, and then after that, you get to keep any two players you want.
Gotcha. Okay. So, and obviously, Nick Chubb would not have gone in the first two rounds when this trade was happening. Right. So, okay,
That
makes a lot of sense.
And then David Johnson and Keenan Allen were the first and second round picks. So he said, well, my season's over here. You take my two first picks, give me Chubb, and then I'm set for next year.
No. Yeah, you got to veto that one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up. So, Dave, before you know we end the show today, tell the people where they can find you, your articles and things like that, and where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, so the pregame HQ, that's where I've been putting a lot of my focus recently. I do, you know, a plethora of articles on there, but the big thing I'm doing for them right now is the buy low, sell high. I'm big into trading. I think trading is the best part of fantasy football. So check out my buy low, sell high article. And then you can find me on Twitter at dkluge90. That's D-K-L-U-G-E 90. And then you can find me on Fantasy Pros as well. I got my own page on there where I'll keep you up to date with all of the newest NFL news.
Awesome.
Yeah, man. So we appreciate you joining the show today and, you know, talking some fantasy and some NFL with us for week two. And again, thank you to everybody who has tuned in, left comments, and those of you who gave us some questions on social media for Dave to answer. We appreciate you giving us a little bit of time. So if you are watching on YouTube, don't forget we did earlier, we have a separate video out now with the Nuggets Clippers Game 7 recap and also Heat Celtics Game 1 recap. We did that as a separate video, so you can catch that on our YouTube channel. If you're watching on the live right now, it'll be available tomorrow. If you're watching the replay, it's already up for you to go check it out there. And if you're tuning in on audio, make sure you leave a like, leave a rating and a review on Apple, Spotify, Google, whatever platform you're listening on to help out the podcast. Mike, anything else we got going on with the network?
Yeah, if you're watching on YouTube and you aren't watching the live, turn on the notification button when you subscribe. So next time we go live, maybe Dave will be back sometime soon and we go live again. You'll get a notification when we're going live. AllInNetwork.net is kind of the hub where you can find everything we're doing, all the different podcasts and the different articles that we write on there as well.
Yep. And hoodie season is upon us. Make sure you grab some merch on AllInNetwork.net. Yes. You can find some All In Network merch there. Don't forget to follow us on the socials. You've probably seen it throughout the show today at @all_in_pod on Twitter. On Instagram, All In Network. We're also on Facebook, All In Network as well. So make sure you follow us on all those platforms. We let you know when we're going live or when new episodes are dropping for all of the podcasts that are under our network. But thank you guys again for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. This is episode 39. Signing off. Thank you guys again for tuning in.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Dave. You're the man.
No problem, man. You know, man.